Chapter 2, The Jump. I stood and looked out at the sea. A storm was coming towards the ship. It had already eaten up one third of the sky. The other men had given me up and were trying to get one of the lifeboats into the water. The boat was heavy and they were pushing for their lives. As soon as the boat started to move, one of the men would jump into it, then it would fall back to where it started. This happened 3 times. Oh, how I hated them. Then I saw one of the men fall backwards, holding his chest. He had a weak heart, and all the hard work and excitement had given him a heart attack. Ha! If only he had stood still. If he had only told them to go to hell. If he had only stood with his hands in his pockets, he would still be alive. But the other men were so busy, they didn't notice what had happened. Eventually, they got into the boat, into the water, and then they waited for the other man. George, they shouted at the ship, jump, we'll catch you. As Jim was telling me this, he paused for some time, looking at his hands. Then he said quickly, I jumped. I could see that he was clearly ashamed of his action. I knew nothing about it until I looked up and saw the ship towering over me. It was higher than a wall. I wished I could die, he cried. There was no going back. It was like jumping into a deep, bottomless hole. It terrified me to see the ship still there. I wanted it to sink, wanted the suffering to be finished. I hated the thought that the drowning wasn't over yet. Nobody in the lifeboat made a sound for a long time. Finally, somebody said, she's gone. They all looked where the ship should have been. There were no lights. All was black. After a while, they started to talk. I could hear them, but said nothing. They all agreed they'd had a lucky escape. I stayed silent. Eventually, I heard my shipmate speaking to me. What stopped you from jumping, you lunatic? Then another said, George, what have you got to say for yourself? One of them walked over to me and took a closer look. It's the shipmate. What? Shouted the captain. No, another man screamed. It became clear they thought I was responsible for George not being there. They called me horrible names. I could hear hate in their voices. It made them mad to think I had escaped with them. They were like a group of little dogs, yap, yap. But it kept me alive, I tell you. It saved my life. Sitting there in my thin cotton uniform on that night, I'll never be so cold again in my whole life. The engineer stood up and called me a murdering coward. Then he shouted, you killed him, you killed him. I shouted back, no, but I'll kill you if you're not quiet. I jumped up at him and he fell backwards and hit the boat with a thump. The captain started to come at me. I noticed him in the dark, a big man. Come on, I shouted. He stopped and went back to where he was. You had a lively time in that boat, I said. I was ready for anything. On that boat there was no fear, no law, no sounds, not even eyes. Well, not until sunrise. Well, then what happened? I asked. Nothing. They only wanted noise. I sat there awake and waiting in the dark for 6 hours. Already ready and alert with a heavy piece of wood in my hand. When the sun rose, I could finally see them. They sat opposite me like 3 dirty owls, staring at me. But in the morning, everything was different. Now, they were friendly, wanted to make up a story with me, to explain why we had left the Patna and not tried to help the passengers. I ignored them, and they spoke quietly to each other about what to do when we were rescued. The day continued, and I sat in that small boat. The sun travelled from east to west, burning my head. Normally it would have driven a man mad, but on that day I was thinking as clearly as any man ever has. The Avondale picked us up just before sunset. My shipmates told their story. The ship had gone down in the storm, sank like a stone, they said. You said nothing? I asked him. What could I say? But it felt like cheating the dead. Of course, everything changed when we arrived at port. A French gunboat had picked up the Patna and successfully taken it to safety. There was to be an investigation into why the officers had left the ship. I told Jim I could help him escape. There was no need for him to go to the trial the next day. I could lend him some money, help him find a job somewhere else. The money was ready in my pocket. He could leave now, but he wouldn't listen. "You don't understand," he said. "I may have jumped from that ship, but I don't run away." For a few seconds we sat in silence. "I would very much like to see you after the..." "I don't see what will stop you. This damn business won't make me invisible. No such luck." And so we left each other that night. I felt very sorry for him. He was a man of less than 24 years, and he had lost all hope for the future. The verdict of the trial was read the next day. Abandoning in the moment of danger the lives of the passengers and the possessions of the owners, therefore, Gustav so-and-so, native of Germany, certificates cancelled. The court was silent. Jim left the court with his head lowered. I found him later, standing, looking out at the sea. I told him he could stay in my apartment for a few days while he decided what to do. He followed me without saying a word. That evening we sat in silence in my room, me at my desk writing endless letters, leaving Jim to his thoughts. Jim stayed with me for 2 days, but on the third he wanted to leave. I knew I couldn't abandon him to the darkness. I would never forgive myself. I wrote a letter to a good friend of mine, telling him that Jim was to be helped in any way possible. The next day, Jim and I parted, and this was the last I heard of him for 6 months. I received a letter from my friend, telling me about what a fine fellow Jim was. I was pleased to hear Jim was doing so well. Soon after this, I made a trip, and on my return, another letter was waiting for me. This time, the news wasn't so good. "There is no silver missing, but he is gone," leaving on the breakfast table a little note of apology. "I regret very much his leaving. He was much liked and will be missed." I put the letter to one side and looked through my others until I found one in Jim's handwriting. I opened it and read his story. It seems one of the crew from the Patna had arrived in his town and was looking for work. "I couldn't stand his friendliness," Jim wrote to me, from 700 miles south of the seaport where he had been living. "I knew he liked me. He thought I was an excellent fellow. Pah! When I remember how he had spoken to me on that little boat, it made me feel sick." Jim's story seemed to follow him wherever he went, and each time it arrived at the port where he was living, he would leave and go to another place. He did this more times than I can count on the fingers of my 2 hands, all this to escape his personal ghost. Of course, the funniest thing was that after a time, because of his sudden departures, he became quite well known in the eastern ports of Asia.